You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games, the players who play them, and the gamers who game them. My name is Eran Aviram.
My name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello!
And hi, I'm Aviv Manoach.
And today the three of us will be discussing extras and supporting characters. All of those NPCs that are, for some reason or other, around your party.
Sometimes there's a few other living beings that accompany your player characters as they go about in their daily business of killing monsters and gathering loot. These could be mechanical in nature, like Pathfinder cohorts, or D&D followers, or animal companions and familiars, and etc., etc., etc. Or these could just be good role-playing elements from the world around your character that took a shine to your party, the old guide leading you to your destination, an orphan boy trailing the group in admiration, or simply a kobold determined to repay their debt to the party. Whatever the case may be, these beings are an excellent opportunity to enrich your game. The whole point of this whole episode is to avoid one simple pitfall, which I have seen happen in countless games. And that is having a supporting character which fades to the background and is never heard of until they need to perform a task. This could be your driver, which you completely forget about until you need a ride home. This could be your familiar, which you... I once had a player who took a toad familiar and put it in his backpack, and he took that familiar simply for that +2 constitution or save, I can't remember which it was, and we have never heard anything about that toad until 5 years later when the campaign ends, and we made a joke about that. That was the whole point of that toad. And that's a damn shame, because you can use these elements to enrich your games in amazing ways.
This problem just happened to me in my Vanor game. I used a hireling that came with the party and was supposed to help them fight specific enemies. And the only time we used them is when they wanted the +3 to damage the hireling. I knew it was a problem, but I didn't know what to do with this NPC beside its mechanical benefits.
Great, you should definitely listen to this episode.
Yes. I'm here to bring the problem.
I think that the first question is, why would you need to do anything with this NPC? One of the main things about hirelings and support characters are that most of the time they are attached to the characters, and therefore to the players. Why shouldn't we put the onus of playing them and caring for them and making sure that they are relevant on the players?
An excellent idea. As we say many, many times during this podcast, we believe in sharing the responsibility, in giving the players more control over what they can do in the game. I think it enhance the gaming experience. I think it add the sense of responsibility and accountability. And I think overall it create a richer gaming experience. There is one issue though. I have seen a lot of GMs abuse supporting character by simply using them as easy targets or creating damsels in distress scenarios around them. Oh, my ranger has an animal companion. Excellent. I will kidnap said animal companion, and thus I have a plot. Da-da-da! Now, there's nothing wrong with this. I just noticed two things that are wrong with this. Number one... number one is it generates the kind of mentality on the player side that I don't want a familiar because they're only good for being kidnapped by villains, so we'll need to go rescue them. And the second issue is that I think it's just lazy writing. It's lazy plot making. It's an external motivator that does not enhance or enrich the world around the characters.
I think it can be an internal motivator, but in order for the player to care about the NPC, they must first have some sort of interesting conflict and drama with them. And that means stuff like having an emotional arc with the NPC, having some sort of interaction that later on can be used to become an internal motivator if they are indeed kidnapped. But so many other things can happen. They can choose to leave. They can choose to betray. They can choose to do many other things that are, I think, more dramatically interesting than just get someone to grab the plot token that is your animal companion in order for you to run after it.
They can have a high-level cleric cast a divine spell which gives them the intelligence of a person and then decide that they're too good for their actual ranger who raised them and then leave him in tears. True story. Moving on.
I usually fall to the other side of this argument. I don't like to use animal companions or anything that is an integral part of the player class or playbook or whatever, because I feel it's like taking away part of the character itself. So I usually don't do it, but it's like I won't want to take the wizard's whole spellcasting ability or whatever, but I guess it can be a valid plot point if you build up to it.
Aviv, you raise an excellent point, and I would like to talk about it when we talk about mechanics later.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to the point. All of these supporting characters are an opportunity. Use it. Seize that opportunity. And I'm talking to both game masters and players. You can make these elements meaningful in your game or make it into a boring burden. So the question arises, how do I make these supporting characters interesting and meaningful to the rest of the players at the table and to my ongoing game? Some very simple suggestions may include, number one, treat them as you would any other character. Start thinking about all your supporting characters as characters in their own right and not as attachment or addendum to other character. Stop treating them as pieces of equipment, extensions of another character, or as mechanical addition without the actual meaning of being a character. My second point is names. Now, I'm amazed every time I encounter a supporting character that just don't have a name. This is prominent with animal companion and familiars, and I can't just fathom why. Because this is a great opportunity for making really funny names. Characters without names are inherently less interactable because you can't address them. And I think it's a very important point. My third point is, if we have mentioned how difficult it is to interact with character without names, is to add interactions. Perform in-play interaction with your supporting characters. There is a meaningful difference between saying, I use my wolf to track the scent of the escaping ogre, and saying, well, I ask Wolfenstein if he managed to track the scent of Christo the ogre. You immediately create two characters who are meaningful to you and the story, rather than the simple generic descriptions. My next point is to create routines. Creating routines for yourself and the supporting character establish the relationship between the both of you. Saying, as we stop for the day, I fix the hamburger, extra rare for Foxy, with extra virgin olive oil, like he likes. Simply establishing a routine that cement the existence and relationship between your character and the supporting character adds a lot. And finally, I would suggest to add the supporting character point of view in various situations. Describe the cave you're entering as seen through the nose of Bingo, the blink dog. Explain to the party how the ambush in front of you seems from the eyes of your drow guide in the Underdark. Everything is black with sponges of red in between, and green glow signify danger. This is a really good opportunity to enhance the way your players and their character experience the world around them.
Yeah, I want to emphasize a couple of your points. First, about names, all of my party, whenever we have a ranger, calls the animal companion by their name. We never call it just the companion or the hawk or the wolf or whatever. It's like one of the player character. We all call it by its name. And the other thing on your last point is something that I do a lot, and not only with animals but with things like extra dimensional entities and stuff like that. It's not only about smell and sight and conventional senses, but think about how this creature that is sometimes not at all human, all of our example weren't, but we are talking about other characters like just Ireland and stuff, they may not conceive of the environment the same way as your party, and it's a cool tool to use it as a GM to convey this environment. A bird may mention how they think the houses are nests, and the people are like the worms on the ground and stuff like that. And the water spirits talk about how everything flows from place to place, etc., etc. It's a good way to emphasize the unique character you are using in your party.
Let us continue to talk about mechanical representation, because one of the problems, potential problems, with having a big cast of characters is they all need to have character sheets. There's a lot of stats going around, and there are several ways to circumvent this. First of all, there are systems in which having minions or extras or stuff like that is a mechanical thing, which is usually very simple compared to regular characters. For example, Savage Worlds have a literal thing called extra. Everyone in the world is an extra. They die really easily. They only have one wound. They don't have a wild die, so they just roll a single die. They're represented basically by just a few stats, and that's all. The main characters, both villains and PCs, have some extra stuff. They have more wounds levels, they can take more edges, they have the wild die, etc. And that means that when you want to have a few extras around, it's not a burden on you or on your players. In my games, where we play a crew of pirates, I want the players to feel like they are actually managing a crew. So whenever they come ashore, each of the players choose an extra from the crew. Of course, we have names for all of them. We have descriptions. We have some relationships with them. Everything that you've mentioned before, we've built throughout the sessions. And they also have tiny little character sheets. They fit on an index card because you don't need anything nice beyond it. So we just hand these index cards to the players. Each player says who is the extra that they want to take with them, and they play that extra. Sometimes I play that extra when I think that the extra would do something that the player doesn't think about. But most of the other time, the player says what the extra does, they roll for the extra, etc. And it isn't a burden because they're just not as complicated as their actual character. In Pathfinder 2nd Edition, there's now a thing called a minion. Summoned creatures are minions. Your animal companion is a minion. Your familiar is a minion. And those are beings that will only act if you use an action, and they only have two actions. And that basically means that they don't take a whole turn. It doesn't take a lot of time to make them do stuff during combat. So it's a lot easier compared to previous edition, where when, for example, you summon the creature, now you had a whole new combatant that you had to play and use. In City of Mist, other people or other creatures are represented as an extra theme. That is one more theme than the four that you already have. Actually, they can be one of the four that you already have. Or in other words, they are a part of your character, both narratively they are relevant to whatever happens to your character story, and mechanically, they are literally a part of your character sheet. You use their power tags in your own roles, you just describe it in the story as if it is something that they are doing to help, or it is something that they are themselves doing. But because they are connected to you, it will always have an effect on you somehow, and it is always you, the player, who rolls for them, who makes their choices for them. There's a bit more about it in the City of Mist book, but we'll not get into that. That's the main thing, and I think it's a great way to represent things. Just make it a part of the character. Aviv, how does it work in Dungeon World?
Well, in Dungeon World, you have, we talked a bit about the actual animal component of the Ranger class, and it's just, it's a move, the Ranger pick a couple of stats, and then he can add those stats to various activity they do. But you also have the more generalized mechanic of hireling, which the party as a whole can get. Rather, you pay them in money or in fame or whatever. Each hireling can have their own conditions. And they just have two moves. One is a move for all hireling. It's when the party asks them to do something they wouldn't want to do, and then you can roll to see if they are going to do it or not, and they may become angry with the party and refuse to help them, etc. And the other is just the mechanical benefit the hireling add to the party's action. It can be help with spell casting or attacks, or when navigating terrain, stuff like that. And that doesn't even require a roll, it's just a flat bonus to whatever other move you are using. So in that regard, it's very simple. You don't even have to manage them. You just know that you have a hireling with the party, and unless the GM uses a move to make the hireling discontent in some way, they are just a flat bonus to everything that the party does. So it's very easy. But it also, as I said at the beginning, it's also a bit problematic, because you don't think about it, and the issue may arise that you forget they are even there when other things are happening.
Which is why I would recommend in this example, and in probably other examples as well, if the party has a hireling, they should still go to one of the players. So it shouldn't be just a note in the middle of the table, because no one takes responsibility on a note that is in the middle of the table.
That's a good idea.
Give it to one of the players. No party resource should be just out there. And this includes extra characters or supporting cast. They could move around between players, but a player should always have a responsibility on them. Now, there's something that you've mentioned before that I wanted to come back to, and that's the mechanical aspect of fairness. Because once you have an animal companion, as a ranger in D&D 5, for example, or once you have an extra theme in City of Mist, you now made a choice or were given something that gives you an advantage in the game, just like all of your other stats. And therefore, if they're going to be kidnapped by someone else, that's unfair. You, the GM, are taking something that the player has earned fair and square, that they chose as a feat or something like that. That's unfair. It's just like taking the wizard's spellbook or robbing the fighter of their magical sword. That's something that they are owed. So, I would suggest not avoiding doing so, but just doing so with the player. Like, for example, I think it's super cool for the wizard to lose their spellbook, but it's something, because it's so dramatic, it's something that should be discussed with the player beforehand. So it's clear that this is something that is A, possible, and B, desired, or at least tolerable by the player. Just because extra characters, supporting characters, are people, and therefore can choose stuff like, I don't want to be around anymore, I don't like how you treat me, or I think something else is more important, or I can be kidnapped by someone else. Just because of that doesn't mean that narratively and mechanically they are in any way different from a spellbook. The player believes and feels that fairly they own the thing in the game, in the story, and they get to decide And they're right. So I think it's not that we can't do anything with them, it's that we should be careful when we kidnap or kill them.
Yeah.
Indeed. I would like to remind everyone that pretty much everything we say here, or anyone ever say, are more like guidelines. Mm. And I would definitely recommend to break these rules, but break them as a conscious thought and for a specific purpose.
Let us continue and discuss some specific types of support characters, and maybe we have something interesting to say about them. What do you have to say about hirelings?
I think I went over the major factors. They are an NPC that you get that are not a part of a specific character class or playbook or feature. You usually hire them, whether it is for money or other benefits, and they provide some mechanical advantage that the party lacks and you want to use. For example, in my group, the party fought against a specific creature they did not know how to defeat, and they recruited a warrior, a mercenary that had experience fighting this type of monster. But other example include recruiting a thief that can lockpick, because no one in the party can lockpick to get past the door, or stuff like that, or recruiting a healer because no one in the party can heal.
The thing I like most about hirelings is that they are temporary. I mean, yes, we are all going to assume that they are leaving by the end of the adventure or something like that, and therefore I can do with them whatever I want. One of them can fall in love with one of the player characters and it can be fun and cool for everyone. One of them can be obviously a betrayer, someone that was hired by the evil overlord and was pushed into our group secretly. They are only here for the money, so we can do whatever we like for probably the next session or so.
Money / other benefits you pay them. It doesn't have to be monetary compensation.
Yeah, but they work hard for the money. So hard for it, honey. They work hard for the money, so you better treat them right.
That's very true. What do we have to say about animal companions?
Well, basically, animal companions are a class feature of rangers. Rangers are boring, hence we shouldn't be discussing this. Moving on.
Nice.
Virtually every group I ran for Dungeon World, which is basically D&D, someone selected a ranger as a class. I don't know why. Everyone loves rangers. Yes.
Really? In all your games, someone decided to be a half fighter, half druid? That's really interesting. Yeah, of course, I jest. Animal companions are an amazing class feature, especially because it's something that you can so easily relate. I mean, I think most people had a pet at one point in their lives, and having an animal companion is a lot like that. There's this creature of usually a limited intelligence who looks up to you, and you form a sort of bond and partnership and move on. I think that's part of the reason why it's so hard for me to see players not forming any bond with their between their character and its animal companion, because it's a relationship that we're all intimately familiar with.
Speaking of familiar, let's talk about familiars.
Indeed. Now, for me at least, familiars, I always imagined a mystical bond between a magic user and their familiar. Something a lot more than animal companion, because there's a literal element of magic involved. And I think this should be something that's present in the interaction between the character and the familiar. I think that everyone who have a familiar should be able to instantly answer, what's the rapport, what's the relationship, the form of interaction between your character and its familiar. Do they think alike? Do they constantly bicker? Do they finish each other's sandwiches? The whole point is there should be a distinctive relationship between one and one's familiar. For example, in my current game, we have a wizard who has a fairy dragon familiar, and the fairy dragon is better than the character at pretty much everything. And we developed this whole notion that in the eyes of the fairy dragon, he is the actual character. Mm. And the wizard is actually its familiar. And this form of interaction lead to a lot of jokes and to a lot of interesting dynamics inside the party, which is something that I think no one should miss.
Finally, we have cohorts. Cohorts are a strange sort of thing because, as far as I know, they exist almost only in D&D and Pathfinder because of a feat called leadership, which allows you to have a cohort. That's a person who is a full, rounded, non-player character with motivation, personality, and everything, but he is subject to your desires. He follows you around. He is under your control, technically, in the game, during combats, etc., and in the narrative. For some reason, they follow your character around. It's a weird sort of thing, but I find it very cool. I wrote an article about motivations. Why would someone become a cohort, thinking about it from their point of view? And I'd like to bring a few examples for things that I think are pretty cool, like a cohort that hates you, a cohort that follows you around and doesn't want to do so. Or maybe he hates you specifically because you defeated them and they were a villain. And now they follow you around to try and understand how come you managed to defeat them, to learn from you, to become more like you. And then eventually their arc, their story arc, will end by them obviously asking for a second duel, challenge you again and trying to defeat you once more, or maybe redemption. There might be a cohort that follows you around because of technical support. Maybe the sword that you're carrying, the magical +5 Holy Avenger, is a relic of a specific church, and there's a cohort following you around who needs to bless it each morning and pour specific oils on it. And they're here because you have the sword. They might not like you specifically. They might think you are overbearing, or maybe they think you are amazing, a messenger of the gods, and whatever you say is holy. The point is, the relationship is built upon them having to be around because some other power told both of you that you have to do so. Finally, I suggest something pretty weird, a cohort that is around because of fate. He's a person that somehow, for some reason, always find themselves wherever you are. When you get into a castle, they were already in the castle for a different reason. When you get kidnapped by the bandits, they were kidnapped by the bandits before. There's a force of fate binding you together, and that other person binds with you specifically and follows you around because you've proved yourself in the first few times when you met yourself together that you are the more assertive, the more player character of you two. You are the person who has the power to pull the story forward, and they realize it and they're with you.
Basically, you're saying either you or the other character is a weirdness magnet.
Yes.
Who attracts you or the other character being the weirdness.
Exactly. So I'll give a link in the show notes to this product, which I will release for free. I'll give a link to a free download of Cohort Motivations.
The example you said reminded me that if we move away from the fantasy aspect of everything we talked about into other genres, we have sidekicks in superhero
sure.
games. And
sure.
they are the primary example, I think, of cohorts, unless you want them to play them
very
in true. The group.
Excellent. And I think that this brings us directly to the summary. Let's summarize. It's been a pretty long episode. What more do we have to say? Any other examples that we have to good, cool relationship between main cast and supporting cast?
A great example I thought about is the animated series Avatar The Last Airbender. If you want to see how to use animal companions / familiars, we don't really sure what they are, just watch this. You have Appa and Momo, both of which have names, have whole storyline written about them.
They have an entire episodes devoted just yes. for them. Yes.
Sometimes without any of the other main characters. Mm-hmm. And just all around there are a couple of, I don't remember on the top of my head, but there are a couple of other places in the series where NPCs have other animal companions, because the whole world of Avatar The Last Airbender is filled with animals helping people to do stuff.
Sure, but there's also Uncle Iroh who yes. is a supporting character for Prince Zuko. He follows him around. He's, I think, maybe a cohort of him.
Could be.
Probably there because Zuko's father told him to follow Zuko around and supply advice and be moral compass, etc.
We can give many, many other examples. Fate Stay Night is a masterpiece in this sense that you have wizards summoning servants which are under their control, and yet each servant has their own desire, wish, and thus betrayals happen, etc. But I would invite you all to try and take example from non-genre sources. You can see this in pretty much any good TV show.
Good point.
If you look at The Wire, for example, you see that they have an enormous supporting cast and many supporting characters, and they manage to make most, if not all of them, very interesting and engaging. I'm watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine at the moment. And again, you have the hardcore main cast, but you have other external supporting characters with others very clearly defined relationships as to enhance your understanding of the main characters. I think if I would like to summarize the whole concept of supporting characters, I would have to go with Immanuel Kant rendition. Immanuel Kant, the great philosopher, basically says that you must treat every person you meet as its own end and not as a means to achieve something. And I would argue that the same is true for any supporting character. If you have an animal companion, he's not just a mean to get that +2 to damage, or that +4 scent to track enemies. He is its own end. Don't use it just as a tool to gain something else.
Well said.
And with these wise words, we shall continue to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of the war.
In this part of the show, we talk about role-playing games in our own personal lives. Uri.
I wanted to talk about my last Pathfinder session. Instead, I will talk about a different session with the same people. My GM got married just 2 days ago, and his wedding, as befitting a GM, was very roleplay oriented, along with the other love of his life, heavy metal. So the person officiating the wedding was dressed in wizard's robes, as appropriate, and started the ceremony by saying, "Hello, welcome to the wedding. I shall be your game master for this evening." And they added a ton of jokes. It is customary to perform 7 blessings, so they created their own 7 blessings based on the 6 attributes of characters in D&D, the blessing of strength, the blessing of dexterity, etc. With the 7th, of course, being the blessing of level up. And it was an amazing experience. It's so much fun to see people who took that joyous and joyful event of their life and made it their own by basing it on the thing they love, namely heavy metal and role-playing games. So to summarize, my GM got married with the party paladin, and now we can't trust her to watch our back. That's my take from it.
Aviv, what about you?
I have nothing new since the last episode, playing Dungeon World, playing Masks. the party's outsider imitated one of the other characters, and that raised a red flag in the security forces, and now we have an inner party conflict, and it's fun. But all my gaming session will be delayed this week because I'm going on family vacation for the holidays, so that's me.
Finally, I am going to run some Pathfinder 2nd edition, but not to my regular party. I mean, I will also be running to my regular party, but that's not the main thing. There's an event here in London called Tabletop Gaming Live. It's not very far away from where I live, and it's mostly for board games and families, but there is some role-playing game as well. So I'll be trying to convince some muggles and tabletop gamers to join the ranks of the role players through a short 1 or 2 hour session of Pathfinder 2nd edition with all of the minis and cool character sheets and dice and everything. There'll be a lot of sparkle, and I will be running like 4 or 8 of these sessions during the weekend. Everyone is welcome to join if you're listening to this before the end of September 2019. That is it. If you want to send us an email, do so at show@dwarfcast.net. You can also find us on the interwebs. We are all over the place. Dwarfcast.net and On the Shoulders of Dwarves. We love your emails. We love answering your emails, either as an episode or directly as another email, as we've been doing for the past several weeks with several emails that we've got, some of which will become episodes. We also really like when you tell other people about us. If there's an episode that you find is useful, like, by the way, someone in my gaming club that found one of our episodes about learning a new system and getting it a new system useful, so he shared it in the WhatsApp group with the other GMs. And I found it charming. And thank you very much, Martin, for doing so. And I'm happy that you found it useful. That share around the tools that we are providing you, and if you think that the tools are not as good as they can be, tell us. show@dwarfcast.net. We want the tools to be as good as we can. Send us whatever critique you have about our podcast, and we would love to try and get better as we do with role-playing games. This is it. And now, as always,
Leitrot!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by Attribution Non-Commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Duo. And you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.